This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 137 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. You know the deal, guys. If you could throw me a rating, it really helps. Makes a big difference. Cool if we could, get to 200 on iTunes. You know, for the size of the show and me not having like a million followers on social media, I think 200 would be really cool. I think that's pretty good in terms of ratings. If you're an Apple Podcast listener, I'd really appreciate it. Also, so you know, don't have to just listen to the show on Apple, Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify. It's on Google. I think it's Google Podcasts. Yeah. Stitcher, it's on all of those. And it's also, I provide the link to my home podcast feed on my website as well, challengerstrength.com. So, I just wanted to make sure you guys are aware of all the different avenues you can use to listen to the show. Today's guest, really, really excited about, Emily Bugatto. Emily is a registered dietitian and also does a little personal training as well. She works, with Dez Pfeiffer. I've had Dez on the show before. She has a really, I say her business has exploded over the last few years in terms of what she's done. They're both young entrepreneurs like myself, and we really connected and hit it off, and I had to have her on. Funny story, we did an interview in July of this past summer, and me, being a doofus, forgot to save the audio from the recorded conversation on Skype, and apparently that deletes after 30 days. So had to redo this one, and I'm honestly glad we did, because anytime I can talk to Emily, I'm going to be learning something about nutrition. You guys are going to be learning a great deal from this. And as much as I love the conversation from July, I think we somehow managed to top that just in terms of the fluidity, the different topics we covered. The conversation just really flowed, and we touched on so many different things, regarding nutrition, protein intake, the rumors about fruit being bad for you, Emily's kind of path through nutrition in terms of like her education and her own personal nutrition and the changes she's made since college. We get a little bit into my journey recently in the Make Jerry Ripped Again excursion. And, she touches on some things. I bring up some specifics of my nutrition. She answers some questions regarding that. So if anybody, I know a lot of you have been asking for, some insight on what I've been doing, you're going to want to check that out, and you're going to want to stay tuned for that, because that is a really fun part of the episode as well. Next week we will have Pat Robles on. He'll be joining the show again. We spoke, year and a half ago. He is a pitching coach for the Philadelphia Phillies minor league system and does a lot of great work, obviously with pitchers, but velocity based training, skill acquisition, things like that. He's done a really good job with that. I might actually make the attempt to make that a dual guest episode with Albertus Barber. I don't know if any of you know Albertus. Some of you do, I'm sure, but he is a pitcher in the Philly system and just an all around just awesome dude who works his fucking ass off, making his way up the system from an unsigned, or from a signed, free agent. Trying to make his way to the show, and he does work with Pat, and Pat has worked with him. So my thought process there is like a little bit of a look into what they're doing together, in addition to some of the stuff that Pat and I were going to talk about. I think that'd be fun for you guys, a fun listen for the pitching listeners, pitching coach listeners, baseball players, strength coaches who work with baseball players. I think that'd be really fun. So I'm going to work on that. So we'll at least have Pat, but I'm going to try to get Albertus on as well in that episode. So be on the lookout for that. Before I ramble too much, I'm going to turn it over to this episode with Emily. She was awesome. I know you guys are going to love this. As always, hit me with any feedback that you have, questions, comments. I'll tag Emily. You could follow her. I love it. The feedback from you guys and my DMs are always open. So, be sure to do that. Without further ado, enjoy this episode, and I will talk to you guys next week. Peace. All right, everybody. Excited to welcome on Emily Bugatto. Emily, thank you so much for coming on. Really excited to have you.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm really excited to be recording with you. I feel like you really have been popping off, not only with your podcast, but with your other social media too. So congratulations.
I try. Thank you. It's, as I'm sure you know, there's a lot of opinionated people out there. We actually, me and you both got into it, I think it was last week. With somebody.
Yeah, you're welcome for standing up for you to Twitter people.
I tagged you in. I was like, I'm have had enough of this guy. So I tagged my RD in, and I was like,
I got your back.
Yeah. I guess honestly,
I just want to let everyone know that the first time I recorded with Jerry, thought I was so bad that he deleted it all.
No, okay. I try my hardest to not like live up to the dumb meathead stereotype. And this is what, literally what I texted you when I was like, I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is we can get to record again. But the bad news is we have to record again. When I use Skype to record, and if you don't save the episode, I didn't know this at the time, obviously, but if you don't save the episode recording
within a month or something,
it deletes. So lo and behold, we recorded this, God, back in the summer, July, I think. And that really flew by. And I literally was about to do it. I think in November, I was about to like put it together and release it. And I was like, oh, fuck. here we go. Here we are again. We'll just be honest with everybody. This is go number two at this.
I don't even like remember what we talked about. So it doesn't matter.
It was really good. Like it was a lot of fun and I liked it and I was really excited to get it out. So I think we can match that for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So before I do outlines for all these things, but I actually did want to get a little bit into the little mini argument we had with that guy, because I think some of the stuff we talked about was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. In a nutshell, basically I was talking about, I know what I said. I said, I know I'm really locked into my nutrition when I wake up at 3 a.m. hungry and I eat tomatoes, is what I said.
it offended someone, of course.
So for the listeners who don't know, I love tomatoes. Being Italian, tomatoes, mozzarella, you throw them together, it's really good. I'm doing it without the mozzarella right now, but I just had some sliced tomatoes left that I didn't use for dinner, and I woke up and went downstairs to the kitchen, and that's what I had at, 3 in the morning. It was like 60 calories. So I was like, hey, like, mm-hmm. that's way better than, whatever the hell else I would have done. Like, I used to squeeze the jelly into the peanut butter jar and eat it all together. And someone had to chime in that if I were doing everything the right way, that wouldn't happen. And
yeah, basically, he was saying that, like, your diet must not really be on lock because you're feeling hungry. And what I said is that, like, you obviously have been in a calorie deficit for a while now. I mean, you've been posting updates on your Twitter, so I'm sure if he follows you, like, he's probably seen that you've been dieting, you've been losing weight. And naturally, no matter what, when you're dieting for an extended period of time, you're going to be hungry sometimes.
Yes.
Like,
I'm hungry just, no matter what.
Yeah, it's not completely avoidable. Yes, you can do things to try to get it as low as possible, like eating a lot of protein, which you already do.
Yes.
And eating vegetables and stuff like that, which you went and ate tomatoes. There you go. Great job. Yeah. But if you're dieting, you are probably going to have to be hungry sometimes. Like, it's not something you can completely avoid all the time. So it kind of pissed me off when he said that.
Yeah. I think everything you just said is stuff that some of it I knew. Now I'm learning even more about it because I'm going through the process myself. And when I say going through the process, up until probably age 24, was always in very, very good shape. But then my business started growing, so I grew with it. That's what I tell people. It's just like, really, priorities weren't there. Like, I've literally been involved with counting macros since I was probably 19 years old. So like, it's been a part of my life. But everyone gets to a point, and I think this is kind of cool where this ties together, where mentally, no matter how much you know of the right things to do, you can't mentally get yourself to do it. And on the same end with the mental stuff, like, I tried to tell that guy, it was like, I, most of the time, I'm not actually hungry. Like, mm-hmm. I'm bored. I wake up at 3 a.m. and like, I tell myself in the past that I used to go eat something. So like, I feel like I have to, or mm-hmm. things like that. It's usually not
it's a physical. Habit.
Yes. It's not physical for me most of the time. It's not like stomach growling, like, I need to eat. It's Jerry's brain. It needs something to do. Like, that's usually what it is.
Yes. And just because you know something doesn't mean you're automatically going to do it. I mean, I have my own nutrition coach. I'm a registered dietitian and online coach, and I have a nutrition coach because I like having someone hold me accountable. So just because you know, you're educated, whatever, it doesn't mean that you're actually like going to apply that every day to your life. So I feel you on that too.
Yeah. And it was nice. Like, we spoke a lot about Julian last time you came on. Having him do something for me, just to know, like, I've put my own macros together before and I've done that for such a long time, but just having somebody to talk to, like, when the weight wouldn't go where I wanted it to, and like I would maybe freak out and like just stop doing it, I could text him and say, "Hey man, like, is this normal?"
Exactly.
Like just having that, like you even mentioned too, like how smart you are with nutrition. Like it's literally what you do for a living, and you have a coach. Just like I could probably like benefit from a strength trainer, and I'm pretty good at strength training. Like that is something that people don't realize about the coach needing a coach thing. Like two of my really good friends in the industry right now, one of them's one of the best strength coaches I've ever really talked to or met, Mike Whiteman. He has another friend of mine, Brendan Thompson, running his programming for him for speed right now, just because he wanted somebody to do it and keep him accountable. Like
it's great to have an outside source to kind of give you some guidance, accountability, and just kind of watch over you. Cause a lot of times you'll second guess yourself. Like for example, if you're not losing weight for 2 days, you might decide, oh, I need to completely cut my carbs or something like that, where a coach would look at it more realistically.
Exactly. It kind of talked me off the ledge a couple times. He definitely has. And even just like, I don't know, some of the issues we talked about this a little bit last time, but I've always been like a guy that likes, you know, bigger meals. So if I'm trying to cut, I'll save calories just for behavioral purposes. Like I know that, you know, instead of me saying, oh, let me space my meals out throughout the day and then getting hungry at night and then I end up cheating and ruining everything, I could say, you know, oh, you know, let me just save some extra calories, have a bigger dinner that leaves me more fulfilled after I eat it. And then I'm on my way to the next day, you know?
Yeah. I remember talking about that with you.
So not to get too into this, cause I mean, I've, you know, if people are going to be listening to the show, I'll post your social and they could obviously see a lot about you. And I want to save a lot of time for like the, you know, nuts and bolts of nutrition, but give us a little, give us a little idea of, you know, you, your background. I think what I love that you talked about last time you came on, and you've been pretty transparent about this on your social media, is, you know, your journey with food and, you know, not to have to tell people not to look at what you are now and say like, oh man, like it's easy for her to say, like she looks great, or vice versa. Like you've been through the trials and tribulations, and you know, I think you said you ate Taco Bell all the time back
every
in
single
like,
day in high school.
All right, yeah. So I mean, listen, I love Taco Bell. I can't fault you.
And honest, I know you do.
is it a cheat meal from time? Before I get to that, let me ask you this too: is it bad to say cheat meal? I feel like people have told me that it's bad. Oh, don't do that. Mentally, it's not good to think that you're cheating, but that's just always what I called it.
Yeah. So I definitely used to call it that too. And I always thought it was weird when people like made a big deal about the wording of it. But over time, I've kind of realized that a lot of times when people say they're having a cheat meal, a lot of times it means like going crazy, like just being completely like off the deep end when they eat, like making themselves feel like disgustingly full. So what I like to call it is more of like a free meal or an untracked meal. For you example, you're tracking your macros, but say on Christmas you get to have an untracked meal. I just feel like cheating makes it sound like so bad and makes you feel kind of like guilty, like you're doing something wrong, when really, you know, having meals like that should be a part of your like overall
mental
like
health,
nutrition.
Really.
Yeah. So I don't really like the word, but if you love Taco Bell, by all means, you should eat it sometimes. I think I personally am scarred by it because...
Well, I was going to ask you, do you ever go back to it at all? Ever?
No, I have not eaten it literally in years because I used to eat it every single day, sometimes twice a day when I was in high school. And that is kind of like the first change that I made. I went from eating fast food every day. I lived out of town from where my school was, so... we would go out to lunch to eat back in the day when people were allowed to do that. We'd go get fast food for lunch. And then I would sometimes have fast food for dinner because I would have time in between like my practices or whatever. So I was just eating crap food all the time. So my first change that I made when I started really like just starting my fitness journey was to start packing my own food. So I started packing all my own lunches and everything. And that was like the catalyst for everything.
Yeah. That like preparation at home is big. I know, Julian talks about that with our kids all the time, our athletes about, you know, making that accountability. Like I said to you jokingly, you know, I don't know how many times I'm going to throw myself under the bus during this episode, but I was like, hey, might be 5 minutes late to record. I had to make my protein shake. And then I ended up realizing I wasn't going to be as late as I thought. So I made the rest of them for the week and just left them in the fridge in my blender bottles.
There you go.
That's been huge for me. Like, mm-hmm. I know I'm going to get home from work late some nights and not want to have my food and or get my food prepared for the next day. Like, finding time on a Sunday to do that has been a pretty big, you know, part of my success, I think, personally.
Yes. And one thing I think, especially for like the clients that you work with, is I feel like a lot of them just don't know how to cook. So even just learning how to cook a few basic things like chicken breasts and like rice and veggies and eggs and stuff like that, like there's some basic healthy things that they can learn to make, but I know a lot of guys are kind of stubborn and don't want to learn how. But I think that everyone should know how to cook. It doesn't matter if you are a male, female, whatever. I don't care. I think that you should learn how to fend for yourself.
Yeah. It's just that, and I feel like when you're always like, oh, I don't have time, like that's the easiest way to make that a non-factor in that sense, you know, just, mm-hmm. you know, taking a little bit of time, like put it in your actual schedule, like realize it's just as important as like the time you set out to do emails or the time you set out to train if you're an athlete or whatever it is. Like it's just mm-hmm. as important, if not even more.
Absolutely.
All right. So I asked you this last time. A lot of people have, you know, catalysts maybe for reasons why they entered the field that they do. And obviously we know a little bit about how mm-hmm. you know, weren't the healthiest with your eating and it wasn't the best in terms of your habits. And then you got into some good, you know, situations and good routines. Was that really what drove you to, you know, get into the field and go through it in college in terms of like your major and all that? Like, what was that process like?
Yeah. So that kind of started it. When I first started college, I didn't even know that dietitians were a thing. So originally my first semester I was in like athletic training, because I was like, oh, well, I love fitness. So like, that's kind of like fitnessy. And then I learned what athletic training was and I was like, oh, it's really not what I thought it was. But I learned what a dietitian was after my first semester. And I knew right away that that would be the perfect job for me. And just because that, like my freshman year of college, I started like slowly diving into those courses. I did not know a lot. I made so many mistakes still with my nutrition and my fitness for the next couple of years. So it's definitely been a thing where I have had to make so many mistakes for myself and waste so much time to kind of like get through all that bullshit and learn like the right way to go about things, that I love helping people just skip over that, because not only is it a time waster, but also a lot of the things that I did are not good for your physical or mental health either. So I love, love being able to help people skip over that. And that is like my number one reason for what I do.
Yeah, I think it's awesome knowing like what you can do to for a person that is struggling in that sense, like to empower them to, you know, be that person they can lean on. I think it's really, really cool. And I've mm-hmm. also, I'm interested too in like, I've found this personally, part of my burnout with my own physique and my own health was, you know, being around weights and training and programming all day and getting burnt out with my own training. You know, have you ever found yourself experiencing any of that when it comes to like your own nutrition that you're, because you're helping so many people on a day-to-day basis?
I feel like maybe for a while there when I didn't have a coach, I kind of did.
Okay.
But for the most part, what I get burnt out in is like the content stuff. So yes. Like back yeah. when I first started, I only would watch like YouTube videos about fitness. I'd only listen to fitness podcasts. I'd only follow like fitness people. And then over the past like year and a half, I realized like, you know, I'm doing like nutrition and fitness stuff all day for work. So that's not really like the stuff that I consume outside of that very much, because it's just like all day fitness is not okay.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that was like, you get consumed by it in a sense. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that can be pretty damaging to trainers and coaches. And it is a field, like even in particularly in strength conditioning, like it's a field with a high burnout rate and a high turnover. Yeah. And I think part of that reason why is there's not enough balance. Like, listen, let's not, you know, put lipstick on a pig and you know, be kind of like jaded about it. Well, maybe be a little jaded about it, but It's going to take some sacrifice, and you're going to have to, you know, limit your social life a little bit to get a business started or be,
yes,
to build a following. But there is some room to have balance in that sense, for sure. And I think people miss that a lot of the time.
And you want to know what my social media balance is my Twitter. Cause as you know, I don't post nutrition and fitness stuff on there very often.
Other than when you come to my rescue.
Yes, I will come to the rescue, but I won't be starting it.
Yeah, no. And that's important. Like for me, you know, I'm trying to think of what apps are really like that for me. Like I'll look.
I feel like Twitter is big for you.
It's big for me, but I've also, like, I thought about this, and I for a while I struggled with the idea that, like, okay, well, people know me as a strength and conditioning coach, so like what I put out needs to be strength and conditioning. And then I was like, well, no, I'm a person. Like, you look at a guy like, you know who Ben Bruno is?
Yeah.
Okay, so like his or Jordan Tsai, like those people like that, yep, right? Like they are huge brands, but they still express themselves personally. Like,
yes, it's okay, they have a personality.
Yeah, like it's okay for me to tweet about like my aggravation with someone not saying thank you when I open the door. Like, I don't,
yes,
not everything has to be like 3 sets of 10, you know, push-ups, time under tension. Like, I can express myself a little bit. And I've learned that, like, I'm sure you're like this too. Like, I'm really hard on myself, and I understand that if I think something is one way, it's probably more towards the middle a little bit, because how my mind works. So like, if I'm being hard on myself saying like, oh, I haven't posted enough strength and conditioning content this week and too much just regular stuff on my Twitter, like I look at myself like, oh, that's probably not true. Like, I'm just probably being a little hard on myself, and like learning that makes it easier to deal with.
Yeah, that's how I feel about my Instagram. I'll think that about my Instagram. Like, I can't just post like a selfie of me. Like,
yes,
yep. I'm a dietitian, but then I post a selfie and, you know, the world doesn't end and people still hire me. So
yeah, that was a big thing for me when I started too. Like, I'm going to make my page mostly for my business and the training, but it's still going to be me. Like, it's not, I wasn't going to make like a Challenger Strength business page and then have a Jerry page separately, because I don't know. I thought it was cool. Like, my life is what I do, so I do it so often that that's what's posted on the page. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's exactly how mine is too. Like, I don't have a separate page.
Yeah. And which is, I don't want to be managing. You got to go on, you got to click different things. It's just yes. All right. So reining it in a little bit, because I'm the king of tangents.
Yeah, we're definitely getting more off topic this time, but that's okay. I don't care.
All right. Educationally speaking, give us a little idea. Like, I think there's a lot of confusion in terms of what a registered dietitian does, what they have to do to become a registered dietitian, and kind of all of the above. Like, give us a little bit of a rundown on like your educational process, and maybe a little bit about what a registered dietitian is, what they do.
Yeah. So I personally have a bachelor's degree in nutrition, and then I had to do a year like hands-on internship working in all different areas of nutrition in order to take the board exam to become a dietitian. So overall, it's over like a 5-year process there. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of education. It is a lot of money. So there are a lot of jobs that dietitians can do that quote unquote nutritionists can't do. But I will say that if you really have to think about what kind of job you want, because you could do the job that I am doing without the credentials, but you want to make sure that you still get an education too. So if you're just going to try to do it without knowing stuff, you're probably going to really mess some people up. So you could get that education elsewhere by doing maybe like precision nutrition training or just self-educating. So it's not like 100% needed to do all that I did, but I will say it definitely helped me a ton learn how to help my clients, learn how to talk to people even, just because I had to do so much like motivational interviewing and working with clients and stuff during my internship. And the reason why Des hired me was because she was specifically looking for a registered dietitian. So you might find a lot more job opportunities if you want to be a registered dietitian. But Julian is a perfect example of someone who is not a registered dietitian, who still knows what they're talking about and is still very smart and educated in nutrition and is helping people in a way that he can help people as well. So
yeah,
I don't want people to shout out like Julian. They have to be a dietitian.
Yeah, so 100%. I think it's the same thing too. Like, I think you know this. I'm pretty vocal about it, but I don't have a degree in exercise science or kinesiology or whatever. And I've talked to people that do, and they say I'm actually lucky in the sense that, like, and at least in strength and conditioning, that I don't get like weighed down by like the dogma and like the stuff, like the stuff you learn sometimes in those fields in terms of like your education is so I don't know how to. Best way to say it, but you get stuff that's become so cemented in terms of, you know, it's how much it's believed, and maybe it's not true. It's not true anymore.
Yes. I definitely learned some things in college that I already knew were not true anymore.
Yes. Yeah. So it's almost like I always loved it because I say when I give people advice on how to get into the field without the degree is like, find somebody you know is really, really respected in the field. They get results and they explain things in a way that's easy to understand, and just kind of like look at that person and say, okay, you know, who are the inspirations of their or who are the pillars of their foundations of learning? Like, everybody has philosophies and things that guide them, you know, whether you want to say, you know, 80% of what we do in strength conditioning or, you know, 80 to 90% of what a good nutritionist or registered dietitian does is all going to be the same as the other because there are principles. There is going to be a style, right, of like how they go about doing things. And I found that person for me. It was guy Joe DeFranco, who's pretty famous in New Jersey. Like, learning basically through his lens, I was able to sift through a lot of the garbage and not waste my time on it, because I knew if he didn't like it, odds are, and he was really good at what he did, odds are I shouldn't waste my time on that, if that makes sense.
Yes, I've definitely learned a lot from like people that I look up to online that aren't even registered dietitians, but they do kind of the same work that I do. So I knew a lot of things that other people who went through the same schooling as me did not know, because I did so much like what I would call self-educating, even though I was like learning from them.
You did. Yeah. You kind of went through a little bit of both, which I think is important. Like, it's, if you go through that route of like, you know, going and majoring in nutrition and becoming an RD, or if you major in exercise science, still learn on your own. I think that's really big. And I've gotten the awesome compliment. I can't even believe I get these messages to this day, but like, hey, I'm an exercise science student, but like a lot of what I learn is from people like you who I see on social media. Like, that's awesome, because that's where you're not, when you're learning from somebody in an exercise science program or a nutrition program, you're not seeing them do the actual work in a sense. Like, if you're in an exercise science program, you're not actually seeing the teacher train somebody. Whereas like, if you see someone who's training people for a living and they're posting what they're doing, or someone who does nutrition for a living and you're seeing like what they talk about with their experiences with their clients, like that goes a long way in terms of like building your base of knowledge, I think.
Yes. It's like comparing like reading a textbook to actually applying it to an actual person.
Yeah. It's like, we all take like these crazy math classes in high school and college, and then you have to learn how to, you know, balance a checkbook or do your taxes and we're lost. So I think that's really cool that like you understood that, like, here you are, you have the degrees and all that stuff, like the quote unquote official things, but you know, you are who you are, and you're as good at what you do as you are because you didn't just stop there. Like, you had to, you know, venture out and like learn some things on your own in addition to that. So I think that's pretty cool.
Thanks.
So we talked about this a little bit last time, and this is before I get into, I have some of these kind of like myths or non-myth type questions that I want to get to, like we did the last time we spoke, but give us a little bit about maybe what you're doing on a day-to-day with Des. I'm pretty sure almost everybody knows who she is on the show because either you reposted it and they're listening to it, or she was on already and they listened to her on the show. So give us an idea about maybe how that started and what you do with her.
Yeah. So basically I am like my own coach under her business. Okay. So I have my own clients. She is not the coach to my own clients or anything. So basically I just work under her. She's helped me immensely because of her huge following and her amazing community that she's created, because, you know, people trust her. So when I was new, I mean, people know who I am now in her community, but when I was new, she basically was like, you guys, this is a great dietitian. She will be an amazing coach for you. And they were like, yep, sign me up. I want to work with her. So it was a huge, huge benefit. And it still is to work with her. She helps me get clients. But I am an online coach. I do nutrition coaching. And I also do some personal training online with our app.
I wanted you to mention that too. Could you do that as well? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm definitely more so nutrition, but if a client does want workouts, I make a program for them on our app as well. And there's videos to go with every exercise and everything. But definitely more just nutrition only clients.
Yeah. So do you find it helpful that you do have a good amount of knowledge in terms of training when it comes to working with a client for nutrition, knowing like, here's what they're doing, here's what they're not doing. Like it makes you better at able to help them in the nutritional sense?
Oh yes, absolutely. So even if I'm not making their program, I still want to know like what kind of program they're following, what kind of workouts they're doing, because it will make a huge difference in what I do on my end.
Yeah. And that actually, this is something I was curious about. I forget who I was talking to. I think I was talking to Julian about my own numbers that he put together for me. And I said, hey, like you dropped my calories down, you know, because we're making this final push now that like I went my first 12 weeks with the same macros and I noticed the weight was kind of starting to stall. So he knocked everything
down.
That's
awesome that you're able to go 12 weeks. I love when clients can just stick with the same macros for like a long time and continue to make progress.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Like I kept asking him like, hey, like when do we change? He was like, when the scale tells us to change. So I would weigh myself every day, every morning. And then he gets a weekly average weight for me. And, you know, I basically had that untracked meal Christmas Eve. And I noticed for like the week after that, you know, the needle wasn't really moving like it had been. And I mentioned it to him and he was like, hey, well, this kind of makes sense. Like you're through 12 weeks. He went back and looked at the calendar. Like you're through 12 weeks. And it kind of makes sense. So we're going to, you know, January 1st, we're going to, you know, quote unquote, drop the hammer and lower things a little bit and go into that next phase. So that's what I've been doing for like the last week and a half. So the reason I brought this up is I talked to him last week and I said, hey, is it possible? And I know it is, but like, is it possible that you're putting these macros together for me? You have these formulas and whatnot. You know, I feel like I'm losing a little more than I have been or a little faster, which is fine. I'm happy with that. But, you know, is it possible that we've underestimated my activity level and that's why maybe some of the weight's falling off pretty fast with these new macros and new calories? And I wanted to ask you, like, how do you try, like, what do you do to try your hardest to make sure that you can accurately, you know, for a couple of reasons. One, you make sure they're being honest with you with their actual activity level. It's like how many times people are embarrassed to tell you that they don't do much.
Yeah.
And two, how do you like just in general, like what's the best way to know, hey, am I correct with what I'm estimating for activity level?
Yeah. So first of all, I assign my clients cardio, even if they are doing their own like weightlifting plan. I assign like if I want them to do additional cardio, I'll tell them like the exact, you know, minutes, times per week, everything like that. So that helps me kind of control their calorie burn more. But the number one thing for me is that I want my clients to not be afraid to tell me the truth. So if they ever tell me something that they think is like, quote unquote, bad, like, I will never say like, oh, damn you for doing that, whatever. Like, I want them to feel so comfortable telling me that I'm not going to like scold them. Because if I do, they probably aren't going to be honest with me. So I think I do a great job at that, getting my clients to be very honest, like, hey, I skipped this cardio session kind of thing. But the number one way to figure out if your macros are correct for you literally is to just follow them and see what happens, which I'm sure is what Julian probably tells you too.
Yeah. Like,
follow them, see what happens. If you're losing weight too quickly, they're probably too low. If you are not losing weight, then you probably need to make an adjustment. So those calculations we do are always just going to be kind of like an educated estimate, but every body is so different and people do different things on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis. So it's not always going to be 100% what we think.
Yeah. And that's, he stresses that to the kids. It's like, hey, like, you know, you haven't put your weights in, but they're like, oh, I'm doing it. Like, I promise I'm whatever. It's like, I know you are, but like, I gotta need a way to, you know, see if we're needing to change anything or if what we're doing is effective. Yeah. Like, you're not letting me do as much as I can if you're not going to include that in there. And that's, I think, pretty important too. But on the other side, you don't want people to get obsessed with the scale. Like, what's that balance?
Yeah. So I personally like my clients to weigh at least 3 times a week, if not more.
Okay.
And when people like are getting affected by the number on the scale, like mentally. I think it's more of just like a mindset reframing. So I don't ever like tell them like, oh, you didn't lose weight this week, like you did a bad job or anything like that. So I always stress that the scale is just a data point. And I think I have some good examples of my pictures that I can show them where I weigh more in this picture, but I look better in this picture. So
yeah,
it's kind of just realizing that it's only one way of looking at progress. Pictures really are a much, much better way to see progress, but the scale is still data that I would like to have. So I'd rather them weigh more times a week than just once a week, because if you weigh once a week, who knows, maybe your weight is way up on that day for whatever reason. You had too much sodium the day before or something. So
yeah,
weighing once a week, to me, I would rather you not weigh at all than weigh once a week, because to me that data means nothing and I'll just throw it out because it doesn't really tell me much. So
yeah, that's like been the cool thing, you know, with what I've realized with Julian is like, is it a pain in the ass? And I say this because some more like maybe on a Tuesday I weigh in at like, let's say with my weight right now, maybe like, or today I was like 260, and then maybe tomorrow like I'm 261. I'm like, oh bitch, like I got a pound back. But it's like you need that, because after the week is up, I could see what the average weight was compared to the last week, and if it was like 3 pounds, he might say, hey, we're going a little too fast here.
Yes,
you know, we got to
look at the averages.
Yes.
And let me tell you, working with ladies, I think educating about the scale and how it fluctuates is probably one of my top things that I have to educate about. And even once I educate, I have to remind them 100 times that, hey, like gaining a pound doesn't mean that it's a pound of fat. It's probably water.
Water. Yes. Yes. That's been like, even me, like, hey, I was like, hey, Jules, like I, you know, had this massive meal, Christmas Eve. Like, is it normal that I'm still 3 pounds over my average weight 4 days, 3-4 days later? Goes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just mark my words. Like Monday, you're going to weigh yourself and you'll have lost a couple pounds from that number, because your body's not actually holding that much body fat right now. It's like you said, just the water.
Yeah.
Cause that those would be the times where I would like wake up and I would look and feel just exactly the same as I did the day before,
mm-hmm.
but I would weigh 5 pounds more because of that water.
Yeah. And sometimes you even look better when you have more water weight in you, if it's in the right places. So if it's like in your muscles and you're feeling more full in your muscles, then you might look better even. So
yeah, that's like the biggest thing I've learned, is to just kind of gradually, like, you can learn a lot from, like, we talk about in lifting, like, asking an athlete how hard was that versus always being percentage driven. Like, learn a lot from, like, oh, I haven't seen myself in this mirror. Like, I had this experience yesterday, like, went to South Jersey to like check up on my family's beach house, make sure everything was all right. And I went inside and I hadn't seen myself in that mirror for like a really long time. I was like, damn,
I look different.
I remember how I looked in this mirror during the summer when I like wasn't happy with myself. And like, now I like, man, like this has been some progress. So there's like little things like that too, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So I have a list of these kind of myths. Last time when I put this together, I'm pretty sure I went through your Instagram and you had been making these posts, which I thought were pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think they were
were like the quiz ones.
Yes. Yes. So I
need to do those again.
Yeah. Those were good. Definitely do those. Those were really good. So I think some of these were inspired by those, I'm pretty sure, but some important topics. So the first one is basically, you know, about fruit's not bad for you. I mm-hmm. feel like there's a lot of confusion in terms of like sugar and people getting wrapped up in that. Like, what's your take on fruit and why do you think people are misled about that?
Yeah. So I don't really know how that started. I think probably, you know, someone came out and said like, oh, carbs are terrible for you, or sugar is terrible for you, or something like that. And then someone else was like, oh, well, fruit has carbs, so fruit is bad for you. I really don't know how it started, but I'm assuming that's probably something like that. And yes, fruit is carbs. Yes, fruit is sugar. And I don't think that either of those things are terrible for you. And plus, it is a natural sugar. And it has so many benefits in it as well that I would not ever want someone to cut fruit out of their diet. Has tons of nutrients, tons of antioxidants, fiber, has all these things that can actually lower your risk for diseases. So I would, unless someone like, actually, no, I can't think of a single reason why I would want someone to ever not eat fruit.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, like all the fads you see out there and all the things that kind of get perpetuated.
Yeah, there's people who won't eat fruit ever, and then there's people who literally only eat fruit. It's like, where are the middle grounds here?
Yeah, who was it? Speaking of perpetuating myths, glad I didn't forget to mention this. Was it Jillian Michaels? Like, oh, too much protein makes your bones like frail or something. It was something ridiculous.
I honestly didn't even watch it because I knew that I would get mad. But I saw so many dietitians.
Irrationally angry.
Yeah, I couldn't watch it. So I don't know much about what she said.
So, okay. So I guess, you know, again, like I said, king of tangents. Give us a little bit of an idea of maybe not only the importance of protein, but like, is there such a thing as too much? Like, what are we, you know, how do you feel about people saying, hey, you can only have so much in one sitting, you won't be able to process it? Like, what's your take on all that?
Yeah, so there's a lot that we could break down here. So first of all, I would say most people probably don't get too much protein. It'd be really hard to get too much protein. And I know you might hear people say like, oh, protein's bad for your kidneys or something like that. And it's not true. Unless you already have bad kidneys, protein is not bad for your kidneys. So it's not really something that you have to worry about. And the protein's not what caused the bad kidneys either. But most people probably need more protein, especially the clients that I work with. I don't know about yours. I think they probably are either way on one end where they're like having 6 scoops of protein a day or like not eating enough protein or calories in general. But honestly, a lot of people could benefit from having more. And I know last time we kind of talked about like the guidelines, and I think that there's a lot of misconception around how much protein, like grams, that people should actually eat, because the RDA, which is like the recommended daily allowance or whatever, is very low. So it's only 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. So not even pounds. So for someone like me who is like, I weigh 148 pounds, but just someone around that amount would only be 53 grams of protein. Can you imagine only eating 53 grams of protein?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Like you,
I would have to try really hard to eat that low of protein.
Yes. Yeah.
But the reason why that amount is like the RDA is because that's actually the amount that you absolutely need in order to avoid bare minimum to avoid disease states. So definitely not the optimal amount, and especially for someone who works out. So you can kind of just throw that number out for any of your clients. The ISSN, which is the International Society of Sports Nutrition, their recommendations are 1.4 to 2 grams per kilogram. So a person who's around my size, like 148 pounds, it would be like 95 to 135 grams of protein.
Okay.
And then even more than that, they say they know that even more than that could be beneficial still. So yeah. I personally eat 140 grams of protein a day, and I weigh 148 pounds.
Yeah. I've been, so Julian's been just giving me pretty much just to match my body weight in grams. And I've actually found it tough now that I'm lighter to only eat like, let's say 260 versus when I was like 287. It's tough. And I think it's more so just because habits. Like I tell people all the time, like, you know, my relatives, when I go to a family function, are like, oh, like I cut carbs out and I'm doing keto and, you know, I'm losing so much weight. And I'm like, dude, it's not the carbs. Like, what do you mean? I'm like, all right, let me explain this to you. You, anybody at the end of the day, and obviously this is, you know, elementary, but you lose weight based on, you know, the whole calories in versus, you know, basically what you're expending throughout the day. And if getting rid of carbs helps you because you love carbs and now not being able to eat them makes you just eat less in general, because that's usually a food that you turn to, then yes,
exactly.
That's working for you. And I'm like, you know, I personally, like I was eating 260 grams of carbs per day for my first 12 weeks. And now I'm like 202, like I'm still over 200.
That's, you know, great.
Which I guess just maybe a little lower for me only because I have to eat so much damn protein because I'm a large person. But like the reason I brought this up is I feel like it's hard to go wrong when you're eating enough protein in your diet, because I know that I need to have the grilled chicken or I've been eating a lot of shrimp lately. I love shrimp. things like that, because like if I have to hit that protein number, it's going to be hard for me to like overindulge on something else. And it kind of keeps me in check that way in a sense. So, like, I just think it's hard to go wrong with that.
Yeah, that's one of its major benefits, especially for people who are working on fat loss goals, is it's super filling. And then obviously, if you're filling your plate with protein, there's not as much room for other stuff. So not only is it really filling, but it's actually not stored as fat as easy as fats and carbs. It has a higher thermic effect. So basically, you're burning more calories to process it than you would compared to carbs and fat. So it's something you can eat more of without it really like going against your fat loss goals. So it's a, yeah, it's definitely a benefit for people trying to lose fat or gain muscle. So whoever you are, you probably need more protein.
Yeah. So that's the thing too. Like, I'll give you another example. This is actually, like, we weren't able to talk about this last time because I had not yet decided to change my life.
Yeah. It's kind of cool how last time I talked with you, like, your diet was completely different.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So that's what I wanted to kind of get into. I lost, so I don't know if you remember this. I lost like 30 pounds, but just horribly the way I did it. I lost like 30 pounds during, like, I'd say from beginning of March. I tried to start doing it and then it just got easier because of COVID. Like, I was home all day. So like, my work schedule obviously was non-existent other than just doing programs. So I could like find more time to work out. And I got pretty much like addicted to doing like an hour on the bike a day in addition to lifting. Yeah. And I was like, probably I was in a caloric deficit for sure, just like based on the number that I picked, but it wasn't done the right way. Like, it was maybe low hundreds to 150 grams of protein, if that, you know, and a lot of, and my carbs were really high. So I lost the weight, but like my body comp was like nowhere near what it is right now. So even though I surpassed that number, I got down to like 267 ish during that. And that was the lowest I got. And then I kind of just went off the rails again during the summer for a couple of reasons. But the biggest thing I'm seeing now is that my protein is, you know, more than adequate. Yeah. So I'm literally just cutting back. Like, I'm just as thick and wide, like my shoulders, like everything. I mean, my lifting has been better this time too, but, you know,
you're not
just
losing
because
muscle.
Yeah, like it's pretty crazy. Like, my definition in like my midsection now versus like, you know, when I was semi close to this weight during quarantine is just, it's night and day. Speak a little bit on that, like when it comes to the protein and like when someone says, oh, like I want to lose the number on the scale, but like maintain my muscle and maybe like, hey, I dropped 5% body fat and 20-30 pounds, whatever it is for a guy and less for a girl, I'm sure. But the protein's there, so it kind of maintains the lean muscle mass. Like, what's that importance?
Yeah, so I think that's a common issue with people who only use like calorie counting as a way of losing weight. Because a lot of times, think of it this way. If you have 1800 calories to eat, you're probably going to fill that with like lots of carbs and stuff like that and not really care about the protein because it's not as fun to eat. So I think it's really important to at least have a protein goal. If you're just doing like counting calories, at least have a protein goal, because you need to eat protein in order to maintain your muscle, especially when you're in a calorie deficit. It becomes even more important. You do not want to just lose a bunch of weight, because what you really want is to lose the fat. You don't want to lose your muscle, because when you lose your muscle, you actually look less fit and less toned and less lean. So
yeah,
you want to do whatever you can to maintain as much muscle as possible.
Yeah. And that was like the biggest thing I noticed back then was like, just to now, like, oh man, like just filling out t-shirts better. Like, oh, like I don't feel, because that's like, that's a tough pill to swallow. Like, I want to be healthier and I want to be smaller personally, but like, I still want to be the quote unquote big guy. Like, I still want to be, you know, 240 and be extra wide and still have that look to me, but I want to be way more lean and actually like not look like I've been filled up with an air hose, which is what
I feel like you have like that body type though, where you're always going to be like the big guy.
Well, that's what Julian said too. And I've had people say this to me in the past, like,
you're not going to be a little scrawny guy.
No, but if I gave a shit about which I have for like the last 4 months, if I gave a shit about how I ate and how I looked, like my body type can look very sick. Like, it can look very good, because I'll hold on to the size and then just lean out. That's before we got on the podcast, I So like I said before, I told Emily that I needed like an extra couple minutes to make my protein shake. She said she respected my gains. And I said, trying to find the Mrs. Challenger strength this summer. And I need to look like a superhero. So
I might screenshot that and tweet that.
You can tweet it. It's fine. You have permission. It's funny.
Okay.
But yeah, no. So like that was big for me. And I think also why I kind of like got off track during the summer, because I didn't have that compass to guide me. Like back when I was really into my macros years ago, I would never get off the rails because if I had, you know, gone off on the weekend, I had those official numbers I really wanted to get to during the week, and not having that, you know, during the summer when I was enjoying my weekends, like made me gain a good amount of the weight back. Like that, that's big.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people can relate to that too, where they're like killing it all week. They're maybe even like too restrictive during the week. And then on the weekends, they kind of let all hell break loose. So I think that is very relatable.
Yeah. And I think mentally too, like knowing, I tell like my mom keeps harping on me. She's like, you can't like just go back. Like once you get down to your number you want to get to, you can't just fall back into it. Cause she saw that I did that this last time. And I said, Ma, it's so different now. How I did it. Like,
yeah.
And I also know, like, you know, if I get back to the weight that I was for like most of the years leading up to when I kind of let myself go, like, I'm never going to not want to feel that good again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the thing is Julian will help you work your calories back up to a very maintainable amount. And then your like hunger cues will kind of go back and everything will be fine. So I think having Julian will definitely help you.
Yeah. Let's go over that a little bit. What's that process like once you get down to your number? Like for me personally, I started in October 287. I'm 260 right now, and I want to get to 237. I want to lose 50, which sounds like a crazy amount of weight. But like, I'm 6'2" and I'm pretty wide. Like 50 for me, 50 for me is like 20 for the regular person, I feel like. But like, what is that process like when you have a client, they've lost that weight, and now they want to kind of get into like that quote unquote maintenance phase, grow the calories up a little bit? Like, how do you do that without gaining weight back?
Yeah. So I think the worst thing ever is if a client reaches their goal, they get down, you know, they're at the end of their diet and then they stop working with a coach, because the time after that is so, so important to maintain their progress. So, you know, at the end of a diet, you might be kind of lower calorie. You maybe have to be doing a lot of cardio. Things are a little bit more restrictive maybe. And in order to get back to a more maintainable amount, you got to slowly increase your calories. Usually your protein's already kind of high, so the increase would come more from mostly carbs and some fats, depending on where you're ending at. And it's going to look a little bit different depending on the person and also depending on their goals and how their body responds. So I have multiple different kinds of clients, but some clients, they want to put a little bit of weight on slowly after their cut because they want to just put on as much muscle as possible.
Yeah. I might want to do that. Yeah. I don't have to. I don't know.
Well, I also have another kind of client who wants to maintain and maybe even lose more weight in the future. So those are the two most common ones. If the client wants to maintain or would be even happy if they lost more weight, I would slowly increase it.
Okay.
So I would slowly add on to their carbs, slowly take down their cardio each week or every other week, kind of look at how their body responds and decide whether I'm going to make a change and how big of a change each week.
Is this that reverse dieting I hear about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of reverse dieting.
So from what I've heard, I'll tell you what I've heard, and you could obviously correct me because I'm probably not right. what I've heard is basically along the lines of, like, I always see people saying, hey, you know, I love this coach. They got me on reverse dieting and it allowed me to stay at the weight that I am or even lose a little more, but I've added calories back. Like,
yes.
Riddle me this. How the hell do I lose all of my weight, but then add calories back, but not gain? It confuses me.
Yeah, I can definitely see how that would be confusing. So basically what is happening? So right now you're in a calorie deficit. You are eating less calories than your body burns in a day. So you already have room to add in more calories there and maintain. So that's one way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So that makes sense. Like, I'm 1,000 maybe a day in the hole right now. If I'm losing 2 a week, 2 pounds a week. So if I ate that extra 1,000, I'm not going to gain weight from where I am right now.
You're just going to maintain.
Yeah.
Of course, the number is going to be different depending on so many things, like the people and whoever. So that's one way that you can add calories back in and maintain. But another thing that happens is a lot of times when people are deep in their diet, they have a lot of adaptations in their body that occur to try to make them not burn as many calories, even as little as maybe when you're eating enough calories, you're fidgeting when you're sitting at your desk and now you're not because your body is low on calories. Maybe it's you not walking around as much when you're training people. Maybe you're just kind of just sitting there because you're a little bit tired.
Well, that's maybe crazy. Not, you wouldn't even realize like that would happen and you don't even realize.
Or maybe you're just not working out as effectively. Maybe, you know, you're lacking some energy. You're not able to push it as much in the weight room. You're not doing your cardio as well. So there's little things like that, that all add up. When people add their food back in and they get that energy back, they end up burning more calories.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then you end up, I guess what would happen from that, so let's just say for argument's sake, I get down to like 240, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm at like 2330 right now, calorie wise, which seems pretty low for my size. But like Julian does realize that a lot of my day when I don't have athletes in the gym is sitting at my desk programming, doing stuff. Like I'm not like, you know,
and you've been dieting for a while now.
Yeah. So I was around 2700 the entire first like 3 months.
Yeah.
So let's say I get down to that 240, 237, whatever. I can pretty much at that point add some of those calories back gradually and now even maintain the leanness that I built and maybe get a little more muscle back, which enhances the look that you want even more, right?
Exactly. So a lot of my year, my 2021 year, was spent reverse dieting after a diet. And I pretty much had just like body recomp where I mostly stayed around the same weight, but I ended up looking better at the end of the year because I had gained muscle throughout the year. So it definitely has a lot of benefits. And when people do it, they always tell me, like, even just like a few weeks in, they're like, wow, reverse dieting is amazing. I feel so good. Like, I swear all my clients who have done reverse diets are so thankful that they learned what that was and that they actually did it.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like I would even say this myself, like there is that fear. Like I know for a fact, even hearing you say all this, when he gives me the calories back, eventually I'm going to be like, oh man, are you sure? Like,
he knows what he's doing.
No, I know. And I'm just saying, like, mentally, that's gotta be a hurdle for everybody. Like, yeah, and I'm also going to be 6 months in.
That.
Yeah. Like I'm going to be 6 months into a routine. I'm going to be like, wow, I could eat more. Like that can't be good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, my clients do say that they're scared at the beginning, but even just a few weeks in, they realize they haven't spontaneously combusted or blown up. They realize that it's going to be okay.
Yeah. So not to get too nerdy here, but like whatever weight you're at, the calories you need to maintain that, is that's the TDEE?
Total daily energy expenditure.
Yeah, yes. That number is, right?
Yes.
Okay. I wouldn't have been able to tell you what it's. I know total daily. And then after that, I was kind of in a fuzz. I just know that like I've seen him put my numbers together, Julian, and I've seen that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So for argument's sake, whatever that TDEE is, when you get down to the number you want to be, you're going to probably be eating less than that, obviously. So let's just say for me at 240, my TDEE is 3,000 calories, 3,200, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I'm eating 2,200, 2,300. I can go back to that 3,200 and that should keep me at the weight that I got down to, basically.
Yes, except the only thing to keep in mind is that as your body gets smaller, your total daily energy expenditure also gets lower.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's I'm sure that's accounted for because that formula is using your body weight as a multiplying factor, right? Like that's,
yeah.
Okay. So that's interesting. Yeah. Like I think that's pretty cool because like it's always talked about like reverse dieting. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but
I talk about it a lot.
Yeah. There's this guy that always pops up on my YouTube ads. And it's like, he really annoys me because he comes across as like you've always been doing it this way. What if I told you you were doing it wrong or whatever?
Is he the one who tells you not to eat fruit and stuff?
I don't know. He talks about like your body's thermogenic energy. Like, I don't do.
I always have a guy who pops up on mine and says like, you need to learn like what fruits and vegetables your body wants you to eat or doesn't like.
Is he a white dude that usually has his shirt off and he's like doing selfie mode on his camera?
Yes, and he has brown hair.
Yes, same guy. Yeah, so I always see that guy. I always see that. Why did I bring this up? Shit, now I'm forgetting why I brought this up.
Reverse dieting or something.
And he's always like, how do we reverse diet? The hack we use to whatever. And I'm like, they're making it sound like it's like some kind
it's of not mythical, a secret.
Like dinosaur. Like it's like when, what's her name, got the dragons in Game of Thrones. Like they were choosing making it sound like it's like some crazy. I'm like, I got to try that shit. I want a reverse diet. What is that? Like, not even
it's not magic.
Yeah.
It might seem like magic, but it's not magic. It's very, very scientific.
Here's the big thing, too. I feel like reverse implies you've had to have gone the other direction in the first place. You can't just reverse.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's a big key, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could reverse from where you're at, but you would be gaining weight if you weren't coming. I don't know how to explain that.
Okay, that's fair. But let me ask you this. Is there truth to the whole, I've been in this deficit for a while, my quote unquote metabolism is slowing down? Like, you always hear people say like, oh, like fasted cardio, get your metabolism going. We know that's really not, it's a load of shit.
Yeah, right? No. Like, that one's not true. There are some adaptations that can occur in your body that would slow it down. For example, a female, if she was in a calorie deficit for too long, like competitors, they lose their period and their menstrual cycle. Yeah. So things like that can happen that take away some of the calories that your body would normally burn. But it's just adaptations that your body has. For example, I told you about like the fidgeting and moving less and stuff like that. So it's not like some like crazy thing. It is just, you're not burning as many calories.
Yeah. I think that's the basic thing to understand too, is it like, okay, well, no, the metabolism didn't slow down. Your body is smaller. So naturally
at a resting state. Yes, your body is smaller.
Like if you're a, you know, sedentary individual, your sedentary activity now burns less calories than it did, you know, 3 months ago. Exactly. So your metabolism is not slower. You're just burning smaller. At a resting state, you're smaller. Like, and that's also right. A benefit of keeping the lean mass on, because you'll burn more calories at a resting state, right?
Yes, definitely.
So that's above all the other reasons you mentioned, like a big enough reason why you'd want to keep your protein high to make sure that you keep the lean muscle mass kind of where it is.
Yep, for sure.
All right. So that was awesome. This was way less structured than last time. I think it's even better.
I feel like we talked about totally different things.
Yeah, I love it though. I think this is great.
I thought so too.
All right. So one more thing that I wanted to get to, because we talked about this last time and I thought it was really interesting, and I also think it's key because I do have a lot of college athletes that listen and they need to hear this. Alcohol as a macronutrient and its impact on calories and sleep. You put up, I'm pretty sure I didn't even know alcohol was a macronutrient, and I want to make sure people don't think I'm that smart. I only realized it because you put it as one of those questions on your Instagram, and it was like, and you basically said it's a macronutrient. And So let me give you my general idea of what alcohol means for nutrition and calories. So I feel like I'm speaking for the average listener. I always knew when I was counting that usually I could go to vodka and it was like 69 calories per shot. But it's like quote unquote empty calories, in the sense that like, if you log that into like your MyFitnessPal, the calories go up, but none of your macronutrients do. Is that kind of true?
So kind of. I can break it down for you.
Yeah, you take it over so no more stupid stuff gets said by me. Go ahead.
Well, you're not wrong. So alcohol, yes, it's a macronutrient, not one that your coach is going to assign you to hit every day, because we don't want you to drink alcohol every day. But it has 7 calories per gram. So the common mistake is that if someone's tracking macros, they think, oh, like this White Claw says it's only 2 carbs, so I only have to count it as that. But if you look at the label, it says 2 grams, but it says 100 calories. So if you figure out the amount of calories that 2 grams of carbs is, it's only 8 calories.
Yep.
So you still have to account for the other calories that are coming from
the other 90, the other 92 calories, right?
Yes.
Is from the alcohol.
Yes, it's from the alcohol, which it doesn't have to put that on the label. It doesn't have to put whatever grams of alcohol. So you do have to account for it. So if you're someone who tracks macros, I would suggest putting it towards your carbs and fats. So you could literally, if you want to put it towards your carbs, an easy way to do that would be to put in 100 calories of honey, because then it's automatically going to, you know, calculate the amount of carbs that it would be.
Okay.
And you'll see that it adds up really fast. It's not 2 grams of carbs.
Yeah.
So it definitely can affect your body composition, and it's not going to metabolize the same as eating actual food. It's not good for fat loss, but of course I understand that it is a part of people's lives, hopefully, less than more often. But I definitely do like to have a drink here and there, special occasions. I am not like anti-alcohol or anything. But you can't be thinking that it's only 2 grams of carbs. So what the hell, you know, it doesn't really count for anything.
Yeah. And I think that's like, I joke around all the time, like, damn, you know, people like, oh, you're big. That's awesome. Like, all right, bro. But you don't understand is that when I'm trying to eat better and I want to go drink, if I'm trying to drink to get like a buzz, like it's not going to go well for me. Cause I need a lot for that.
Yeah. Very so true. Like, damn, I don't need a lot, thankfully.
Yeah. Like I have this college athlete that I train, and she's like, oh yeah, like 1 or 2 White Claws. And I'm like, ow. And I'm like, damn, I wish. It's like, I would need 10 of those things to even feel anything. It's like, oh, there's 1,000 calories, right? Like,
yeah,
it adds up really quickly. And that's why, like, you know, you see a lot of athletes go to college, and if like they're not on a good schedule and they're going out a lot, like they could put 10 or 15 pounds on just in drinking. Like it's pretty insane. Like you don't feel like you're not eating it, but it has its impact.
Well, and a couple other tips for your athletes and whatnot too, is that, if you're going to drink, make sure you're not mixing it with sugar. So if you're going to have alcohol already, don't mix it with like sugary pop or even juice or anything like that. Try to at least have something that is lower in calories. Like I mentioned, the White Claw having not just 2 grams of carbs, but it actually is a pretty good option because it doesn't have a bunch of sugar in it. So if you are going to drink, try to go for the options that are like maybe with a diet pop instead of a sugary one, or any of the like seltzer drinks. Those are better options too. And the most important thing is if you're,
I hate to be annoying, but I just lost you for like, 40 seconds, maybe 30 seconds.
No.
I'll jump. Yeah. And I think it's me. It's just poor connection on my thing. So just go through just start with the tips again about sugary stuff. Go. Okay, I'll edit it, but go ahead.
Okay. So I want to give your athletes a couple tips if they're drinking. So first of all, you don't want to mix the alcohol with something that has more sugar or more calories. So mix it with something that is sugar-free, calorie-free, like diet pop, or even just go with a seltzer. You don't want to have all of the extra calories added already to the alcohol. The most important thing, though, is that a lot of times when people drink, they stop caring about what they're eating and they go order pizza and Taco Bell drive
drunk
through. Yeah. And that is where you can really like have a downfall, because that is just like calories on top of calories, and the alcohol actually makes you metabolize the food differently and store more as fat. So it's just like a lot of negatives going on there.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Just to think, well, cool in the sense of like, the different factors that nobody thinks about when it comes to that. Like you meant, like I always say that all the time. Like I'm not worried about the, like I can eat less during the day and save room for the alcohol calories and all that type of stuff. But I know for a fact, it is very hard to fight myself when I've had a few glasses of wine and there's like a bag of chips in front of me. Like I know I'm going to have an issue turning that down. So that's why I try to avoid. This has actually been perfect. Like, due to, I guess, the one positive of COVID and the quarantining and the, you know, less social life is that this is usually a time of year where every weekend I was like, oh, you want to go to the Hoboken, like in New Jersey, you want to go to the city, whatever, like that with my friends. And like, I haven't really had that temptation or had to avoid doing that. So I've literally just had like 6 months to be like, all right, like I'm going to get into the best shape of my life and then be ready for the summer. And like, I could actually enjoy myself. Like,
it's that's how it's been for me too. Cause I don't drink like at home.
Yeah, me neither. It's crazy that you can, you know, really get a lot accomplished if you avoid, you know, go out, but like you don't have to maybe drink that for those few weeks. If you're really, I mean, this is if you're really dedicated to what you're doing and you need to get something done. Yeah. Like
sometimes I'll just have one drink and like hold it the whole time. I mean, I'll drink it, but like the same drink throughout the whole night, just so people aren't annoying me.
Yeah, that's pretty big. You know, just in terms of like being kind of social and like not getting ridiculed. Cause I even have trouble with that sometimes. And it's like, man, like, no, like I'm good. Like, hey, do you want to have dinner with us tonight? Like, no, I'm okay. Like, I'm just kind of, you know, relying on what's in my kitchen right now. Cause I know it'll be accurate. It's like, oh, come on. It's like, no, like, listen, like I'm on a path right now that I need to stay on, and hopefully, you know, you could stick to your guns enough to kind of fight through that.
Yeah. And then, you know, you can always work it out, work it in here and there if you want to go out with friends and whatnot. Definitely Julian just finding your balance.
He's like, hey man, like we could knock like 100 to 150 off, you know, for Monday through Friday. So you have that for Saturday if you want. I'm like, oh, we'll see.
There's just nothing going on right now. So
yeah, there's no point. I'm like, I'm going to take advantage of this. Like if I didn't take advantage of this and then April, May came around, the vaccines, you know, spread out. And like, I'm thinking we're going to be back to like decently normal summers. Mm-hmm. Like I'm hoping.
I think so too.
I think we're on that track. Like I want to know, like, I know when May gets here, like every weekend, like, let's go out. My parent, mm-hmm. my family's going to be like making dinner. Like I have to be ready for that. If I don't capitalize on this 6 months that I have of that not happening, then I'm really screwed when it comes back.
Yeah, that's very true. Perfect time right now.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So wrapping things up a little bit here, closing thoughts, anything that we talked about that you want to kind of touch on again or anything we didn't get to? This was awesome. I think somehow even better than the first one.
Yeah, I think so too. Very different from the first one too.
Yeah. Everyone's going to be listening to this going, man, I wonder what that first one was like. Yeah.
Missed out.
Yeah. All right. So any closing thoughts from you, anything you wanted to touch on, you know, mic is yours if you have anything.
No, I just say that, I have two podcasts, Dietitian Table Talks, if you're looking for nutrition stuff. And then Below the Influencer is for fun. Probably not for guys though. So if you're a guy, probably don't head over there.
Yeah. I love that you guys are doing that. I think it's going to be pretty cool. And
it's fun.
You guys have fun personalities. It's going to be, and I say you guys, so people know it's you and Dez.
Yeah. Me and Dez.
So yeah, that should be, I've listened to a little bit of her brunch with Desby. She's funny and I love how real it is. And more of that is needed on the internet for sure.
Yep.
And I also loved how you guys played around with the fake funny call her daddy title of the first episode. And then one of you tweeted like,
new fathers.
Yeah. You're like, no, we're not trying to replicate that. We did it to be funny. Like, relax. Yeah,
definitely not.
all right. So again, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm gonna prepare to get a notification on Twitter that you have you exposing me for.
I'm literally on my way to do it right now.
All right, I'll be on the lookout. But thanks again. This was awesome, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
You too. Thanks.
You got it. Thank you for listening to another episode of Muscles in Management, brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jerry DiFilippo, signing off from the show that's changing how we view sports performance, training, and business.